You wouldn't even recognize me as the person I was before. Sometimes I hardly recognize myself. I would fly into an inexplicable rage, or sink into deep despair, or be overcome by a completely irrational terror. Sometimes it was like I wasn't even human. Or I was outside myself, watching these things happen and completely powerless to control it. I felt trapped in my own body, unable to escape. But from the moment Josh saw me, all of that changed. He saw me across the crowd and he looked at me, and I could tell he saw me. The woman inside, beneath that pain and that brokenness and that sickness, he saw me. And I knew right then that he loved me. And it was like, because he loved me, I could almost love myself. One moment he was across the crowd in the distance, and the next he was right there in front of me with those eyes that were already seeing into me. And all he said was, as if he had known me all along, very simply, "Mary, you're free of it. Be free." And I was. That's the way Josh was. Is. That's the way Josh is. He wills you into living your life more fully. He believes in you, and because he believes in you, you begin to believe in yourself. I mean, take Peter, for instance. Now, I love the man dearly, but he couldn't lead his way out of a fishing net. But Jesus, Josh tells him he's going to be the leader of the disciples, and all of a sudden, Pete starts to believe it. He starts to become the man Josh said he could be. That's what I think drew people to him, more than anything he said, more than anything he did. It was the way he got us to believe in ourselves, the way he got us to see ourselves through his eyes, and to dare to believe that those were the eyes with which God saw us. All my life, I'd been told by the priests, by the men at the temple, that I was too broken, too flawed, too sick, too dirty to ever enter even the temple court, to ever approach the presence of God. But Josh showed me, told me, helped me believe that God accepts me. Just me. Just as I am. I think that's actually what got him into trouble. All that talk about God loving us as we are, just as we are, no priests, no rituals, no sacrifices necessary. Like those guys were ever going to give up their control all on their own. We told him to ratchet it back all last week, always looking over our shoulders. We told him to just take a break, tone it down, give it some time to cool down. But he wasn't having it. He said that it was too important. He said that we were too important. I wasn't there when they came for him. I'm told he went without a fight. And that's Josh, always a gentleman, always seeing the best in other people, even the ones that were trying to harm him. I didn't see them take him away. But I was there when they brought him before the temple court and before our regional governor and before the Roman overseer. I was there when they hurled their accusations against him and they called him blasphemer and traitor and insurrectionist. I felt part of that old rage welling up inside me again that they could say these things about him. The most faithful, the most peaceful, the most loving person I've ever known. I was there. I watched as he took their lies and their accusations and their insults and their jeers without so much as a comment. I had to turn away while he took their whip. I don't remember the walk up the hill. I barely saw the ground because of my tears, but by the time I reached the execution site, my eyes were dry. And I was just thinking to myself that he had seen me. You know, he'd seen me through my brokenness, through my pain. And he had healed me somehow by loving me past that brokenness. And I thought it was the least I could do to bear witness to his. So I made myself watch. I memorized the lines of his face, the sharp color of the blood, the cries all around me, not just his, but the man on either side of him, the people gathered at the foot of the cross. I know some of those cries are my own. And just about the time I thought I would go deaf from all the things I didn't want to hear anymore, I heard his voice cry out, and I thought, thank God, he's going to put a stop to this. He's going to call down the angels or something, and he is going to end this nightmare. And all he said was, forgive them. He was my best friend. But in that moment, I hated him. I wanted him to fix it. I wanted him to make it right. I wanted him to right all the wrongs of the world, to be who he said he was, God! I wanted him to make the bad guys suffer. I wanted him to make them pay. I wanted him to be so powerful that they couldn't destroy him, so righteous that he would strip them of their lies and their lives. And he said, forgive them. How dare he? All that time, I thought I understood what he meant about forgiveness and God forgiving us the worst of ourselves, but I clearly missed it. I didn't get the full scope to forgive them too. He died soon after that. I know the moment it happened because my whole world went dark. The ground trembling beneath my feet, the breath stopping in my throat. I don't know how long the darkness lasted. It was still dark this morning. That's what you really want to hear about, isn't it, this morning? So this morning I went to the tomb first with Salome and Mary, the mother of Clopas, and we went just to tend to his body because we didn't have a chance to do that on Friday, and we just wanted to make sure that he had a proper burial. We were almost to the tomb when we realized that we had no way to move the stone. I mean, we're pretty tough women, but there were only three of us, you know, and that was a really big stone. But we kept going because we thought maybe, you know, the guards could help us move the stone, and maybe if we begged and cried a little bit and put on a show that they would take pity on us. Pity, a Roman soldier, Salome said in mock horror. And we all kind of laughed at that. It felt wrong to laugh a little bit with Josh still in a tomb around the bend in the road. The smile was just leaving my face when we came around the corner and we caught sight of the tomb. And we all stopped short. Mary reacted first, a guttural cry of anger and pain, like it wasn't enough that they had killed him in front of our eyes. They had to desecrate his burial place too. I knew before I even looked that he wouldn't be there, but I had to be sure. I had to be sure. And so I peered into the tomb, and of course, Josh wasn't there. But the tomb wasn't empty. There was a man sitting there, dressed in white, gazing back at us like he'd been waiting for us the entire time. And when he spoke, his voice was soft, but his words just went right through me, you know. And he said, you're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. But he's not here. You'll see him again, like he promised. Go and tell the disciples, the rest of the disciples, that he'll see you all soon in Galilee. Well, we didn't say anything to him, and we didn't say anything to each other. For an infinite moment, we just stood there and stared. And then we ran, stumbling blindly up the path. I don't know why. I'm not proud of it. I can't explain it. But it's like in that moment, each of us just got a little piece of understanding, just a little glimpse of what it might mean. Not that Josh was alive, that was the good part. But that he was somehow divine. That this person we'd known for so long was someone and something more powerful, more terrifying than we had imagined. Not our friend. Not our leader or our teacher. Divinity wrapped in flesh. It was more than I could grasp and more than I could express. But of course, we eventually did tell the other disciples. I came back to the tomb with Peter and John, watched them peer into it as we had done, and then run away chattering with each other about the joy of the empty tomb. I stayed behind. I needed a few minutes just to kind of process it. And so I stood there, I don't know how long, just running over all of the things that had happened and trying to get my mind and my heart to make sense of it. I didn't even realize I was crying until I felt the little splash of a tear on the back of my hand. And then just because I had to be sure again, it was like pinching myself to make sure I was awake, I went back to the tomb and I peered in again. And he still wasn't there. But this time there were two men sitting there. And they said, "Why are you weeping?" "I'm looking for my friend, my Lord. And I don't know where he's been taken." And then from behind me, another man spoke, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And to tell you the truth, I don't even know why I was crying anymore. It was just so much. You know, it was just to take it all in. But suddenly the overwhelming need just to see Josh again, just to touch him or to make sure that he was safe somewhere, it overpowered me. And so I blurted out the first thing that came to me. I said, "Please, please, if you're the one that moved him, will you just tell me where he is? I need to see him. I need to make sure he's safe." And he said to me, "Mary." And I knew. It was him. He was exactly the same, and yet he was completely different. Or maybe it was that I was seeing him in a completely new way. In any case, it didn't matter to me. I ran to him and I threw my arms around him, in part because I had to make sure he was as solid as he looked, and in part because I just couldn't help myself. The joy of seeing him there, to touch him just for a moment. He was warm, and he was solid and real, and I could feel his pulse, that living pulse beneath my palms, for the moment I held him. Alive. So, what happens now? Where do we go from here? I confess to you that I don't know. I'm not sure what it all means. I don't know what it is to follow Josh anymore, what that means for us. I do know that it means something has to change. It means we have to change. Like him, we're completely the same and yet completely different. We can never be the same having encountered the cross and the tomb and the garden. And I don't know what that change entails, and so it's frightening. I do know that it's not about getting it right the first time or being perfect, flawless people. I do know that this is a journey, like the path that leads into the garden and then back out into Jerusalem and the whole world beyond. I do know that all of this has something to do with the fact that he called me, that he appeared to me, a broken, flawed woman who no one else ever gave the time of day. that he appeared to me and he loved me. I know it has something to do with the fact that Josh was always saying, God is love. And maybe the first step, it just starts with trying to love like he does. Trying to live with that kind of light and joy. Now, I don't know where you all are today. Maybe you're a little bit like Peter, and you feel like you've made some mistakes. Or you're like Thomas, and you need a little extra convincing. Maybe you're not sure how good the news is, or if it's good for everyone you care about. Maybe you're like me, and you're a little hesitant. Because, you know, you've loved before, and in that vulnerability, you've been hurt. And we're talking about loving the entire world here, and that's a lot of vulnerability. Maybe you just don't know where to begin. I don't know where you are. I don't know who you are. But I know who Josh, who Jesus is. And I know that his love is for all of us. And his joy, this joy, at his resurrection is for everyone, no matter where we are on that journey. And more than anything I know now or have ever known, I know that he is alive. Not just here in a garden once, but out there, all the time, in you, in me, in everything that has life, today and every day. I know he lives. And so will you walk with me? Will you go with me from this garden and out into a world unsure of what the joy is, unsure of what the blessing is, but proclaiming the one truth we know somehow and everywhere and for all time. He lives. Will you stand and sing our closing hymn?